This is so amazing. 7 weeks prior to someone flaring with inflammatory bowel disease, you could detect it using AI. So can you imagine if you could detect it 7 weeks early and do something, then they won't end up in the hospital with a flare. How cool is that? And it's called physiological data from a wearable device to identify and predict inflammatory bowel disease flares. This blows my mind. I hope it's blowing your mind. Obviously, we can have it in the, if it's in the colonoscope for colon polyps, it could be in there for looking at ulcerative colitis activity. So there's been 25 studies so far looking at using it to quantify how active is the ulcerative colitis during the time of the scope. Also, there's 12 studies on using it for the capsule endoscopy for patients with inflammatory bowel disease. And for the colonoscope, it can distinguish whether there's ulcerative colitis or not, Crohn's or not, and whether it's ulcerative colitis or Crohn's. So the scope itself, without biopsying, can tell whether it's ulcerative colitis or Crohn's, just from the images. So this was a systematic review on AI and endoscopy and inflammatory bowel disease. Well, today's talk is artificial intelligence and gastroenterology. Thus far, we did 2 months ago, AI and cardiology. Last time, AI and pulmonary critical care. Next time, it'll be AI and oncology, which I know is exciting to hear about for Ola. And today, we're going to explore the gastrointestinal tract. Now, what's interesting about GI is it's the one area in medicine where the most randomized trials have been done. So the GI physicians are ahead of everyone else in terms of doing randomized evidence-based trials for artificial intelligence in medicine. So bravo to the GI world, because they really got it right. They approached it the way all of us in this room would approach it, which is evidence-based, randomized trial. So the studies we're going to talk about today are really the best studies in AI because of the fact that they're truly evidence-based medicine. So let's get started. So you guys recall, I'm Mel Spiceman. I'm the president of American College of Artificial Intelligence and Medicine. Now, in preparing today's talk, I went on PubMed to get the evidence-based viewpoint this week of how many articles are there on artificial intelligence and gastroenterology, and the number was 2,300 or 2,300. Now, just to give you some perspective, in 2018, there were only 60 articles ever written on artificial intelligence and gastroenterology. And by 2019, that doubled to 130. And then 2020, 300. So as you can see, in the last 5 years, there have been 2,000 articles on artificial intelligence and gastroenterology. So this is an exponential curve, like truly explosive growth in research around artificial intelligence. Similar kind of numbers would apply no matter what specialty we look at, whether it's cardiology or pulmonary critical care or oncology. Prior to 2020, very little, less than 1,000 papers ever. And since 2020, 1,000 a year within every specialty. So we really have most of what you see coming out that's new information in medicine tends to have an AI spin to it. So I think it's a good way to learn is to do case-based teaching. So my talk today is going to have a lot of cases in there. These are cases that you and I have seen numerous times in our medical career. The first one is a 30-year-old man who comes to your office with inability to eat, drink, or swallow his saliva for the last 2 hours. While he was eating, he felt that his food bolus got stuck. It didn't move. It's like stuck in the middle of his esophagus. Now, interestingly, this patient has asthma and eczema. What is the diagnosis? And you may see this in one of your exams that you take soon, because this disease is actually more common than we know, and it frequently, this type of question will appear on a board exam that you're likely to take soon. For example, I'm taking my recertification for the board exam in internal medicine a year from now, and I have no doubt that this case example I'm giving you will be on that exam. So it's called eosinophilic esophagitis for an adult who has dysphagia. So how do we connect the dots of AI to eosinophilic esophagitis? Well, in this paper that came out in April of 2024, the researchers developed a machine learning model that they trained on EGDs from 273 patients. So they basically gave the AI algorithm training on real eosinophilic esophagitis cases, 273 of them. It fed in the images from the EGD. Then it also fed in images of 93 normal patients. So it's teaching the algorithm to recognize eosinophilic esophagitis. So that's how it was trained, with the training of the model, they call it. Now they have it on the EGD scope. So if you were to do the scope on me now, the AI could just identify whether or not there was eosinophilic esophagitis. It's been trained to do so with an area under the curve and a sensitivity of 90%. Who would have known, right? Now, here's something we see extremely often, and especially in the office, but even in the hospital, a 60-year-old man with GERD. Now, often GERD is a lifelong or long-standing problem. In this case, he's had it for 25 years, and he's a smoker. So what disease do we think about in a smoker with GERD for many years? You're right, Barrett's esophagus. I knew you would get it. So Barrett's esophagus, as you know, the reason we worry about it and we surveil patients because it can turn to cancer, and the survival rate for esophageal cancer is quite poor, only 17%. So here's something disturbing. In our current world, you may find this hard to believe, but this is the truth. This is the data, the ground truth. 25% of early esophageal neoplasia is missed on the EGD by physicians. This is just the reality of it. And as you know, if you find it late, that's it. They're not going to make it. So the point is, can we use artificial intelligence to see on the EGD the cancer that's developing early when normally a physician would miss it? Maybe because our human eye is not able to see it yet because it's not big enough. So in this study, in January of last year, they used a transformer to classify early Barrett's from the endoscopic images. And how is it that we do that? It's called a convolutional neural network. That's the AI technology that reads images like an X-ray. We talked about that on the previous conferences. So CNNs can be used to detect early esophageal neoplasia. So we talked a lot about how we could use it, say, to read an EKG or an echo. We talked a lot about how we could use it to read an x-ray, a chest x-ray, or a CAT scan. Now we're using it in the scope to look at the images during the scope to see an early esophageal cancer that the human eye might otherwise miss. So there was actually a Barrett's AI consortium algorithm that was built, and it improved the sensitivity of detecting neoplasia from 74%. So 74% meaning we missed 25% of them, right? I told you that. So now we could make that better. We can go not to 100%, but we can make that detection rate go from 74% up to 88% if we use this Barrett's consortium algorithm. Now, other places are trying to do the same thing and improve the care of patients with Barrett's and esophageal cancer. So what about Mayo Clinic? They're using deep learning to read the slides, the histology. So like when you do the scope and the GI attending does the biopsy and sends it to the pathology department, the pathologist has to determine what's the degree of dysplasia. And that is critical as to whether an intervention is going to be done, right? So there are often a high inter-observer variability among pathologists. We can eliminate that if we have AI look at the image on the pathology slide. All that inter-operator variability where two different pathologists aren't agreeing on the degree of dysplasia, it all melts away if you have AI read it. Now, even more importantly for early detection is how do we find patients that might have Barrett's before it turns into cancer? And this is the part I really like. We have so much data in the EMR, right? You guys have Epic here. There's a ton of patient data in that EMR just sitting there. We can ask or tap into that data with a large language model like ChatGPT or another one to scan all of the data that's there and try to identify patients that would likely have Barrett's that weren't getting screening, and we can then alert you to call your patient in to send them for an EGD to look for Barrett's. So that's another way. So these are all different ways that AI could be used. AI could be in the scope looking at the esophageal mucosa to see whether it's early cancer when the human eye won't know that, or AI could look at the path slide of a biopsy to be the final tiebreaker when the two pathologists aren't agreeing on whether the dysplasia is mild or severe, or the AI could just be a large language model that's looking through the medical record of the entire hospital here, trying to alert you that, wow, this patient should be screened because they have all the risk factors. They've had GERD for many years. They're a smoker. And, you know, we didn't recognize that we need to call them in for screening. So the opportunity for prevention using a large language model to look at an electronic medical record, not just for GI, but for every part of medicine is tremendous. I hope you could see that in this case example. This is just an example of how you could use a large language model to identify through millions of EMR records patients that might have a disease that needs to be screened for that hasn't been screened. Because the large language model could see, were they screened or not for blank? Assuming they met the criteria. Let's say they met the criteria for lung cancer screening. Did they get screened? If not, they could alert you. We could screen a lot more people that are being missed. So the potential here for reducing mortality by detecting cancers earlier and taking them out is absolutely amazing here. So AI can be used to detect esophageal cancer early. A group that published this paper in bioengineering in January of this year. That would be this month, right? Well, last month. It's already February. So a month ago, it was published. Precision imaging for early detection of esophageal cancer used an algorithm. They called it YOLO5. And it was able to predict from looking at an image whether someone might have early esophageal cancer. Now, why is this important? Well, we said if it's right now, it's almost always diagnosed late, and no matter what we do, they're going to have a high rate of mortality. But we can change that if we start to use AI for early detection. In October of last year, they found in this paper that artificial intelligence could be helpful for esophageal cancer. And we call this precision oncology with regard to management. So there's detection, there's management. So we talked quite a bit about the esophagus. We're working our way now to the stomach and H. pylori. Now, this is cool because normally if I sent a patient to get an EGD and the gastroenterologist wanted to check for H. pylori, they would maybe send a path sample, and I'd have to wait for that result. But in this case, just by having AI embedded into the scope, and as you guys hopefully know, AI is now embedded into scopes, it can, just by looking at the image while the scope is in the stomach, could tell you right then and there, H. pylori is present or absent. Don't have to wait for days for some kind of test result, just from the image. So this is Annals of Gastroenterology in October of 2024. AI could detect H. pylori from endoscopy images. How cool is that? I think this is amazing. Another similar paper in Gastroenterology, September 2024, development and application of an AI-assisted endoscopy for H. pylori, multi-center randomized trial. This is what I love about GI physicians. They're doing the randomized evidence-based trial. So this was the convolutional neural network. It was in the endoscopy. Now, this isn't like just theoretical. Like almost everyone that has a colonoscopy scope, a colonoscope, almost everyone that's using a colonoscope right now has AI in it. So this is just doing it, doing the upper scope, the upper endoscopy. It's the same technology, the convolutional neural network. So you can use it to diagnose H. pylori at a rate of sensitivity of 90.9%. and specificity of 91%, compared to not using AI, just the physician alone, only in the 70s. So definitely improving diagnosis. So again, message, AI as a tool makes the diagnostic process better. This paper in August of last year found that AI, when it was in the endoscope, was far superior to making a correct diagnosis of gastritis than if you just did it with the physician alone. So now, not only does esophageal cancer have a high mortality rate, and we rarely can detect it early, the same thing is true of gastric cancer. I'm sure if any of you in the room have had a patient with gastric cancer, I've had many, when we find it, it's too late. There's usually nothing that we do that changes the outcome. It's very sad. They tend to pass away. Well, now we can make a difference. There have been 42 studies, 42, that demonstrate that deep learning can be used to classify, detect, look at tumor invasion, look at cancer margins, do early detection staging, find pre-malignant lesions, and it outperforms humans in accuracy. This is really important because gastric cancer is the fourth leading cause of cancer mortality worldwide, and AI, just like in the case of the esophagus, can, for gastric cancer, provide hope for early diagnosis and treatment. Can you imagine how amazing this is? So this was a systematic review of these 42 studies. What's really interesting is all of this that I'm showing you thus far has emerged in the last year. Isn't this incredible? The progress we're making in medicine, the breakthroughs we're making just because AI is now a commonly available tool in medicine. Well, let's go back to another case because I like to teach around cases. This is a 35-year-old man who presents with abdominal pain radiating to the back. Well, you're like, I know what that is, right? He drinks beer. Oh, okay. His lipase is high. Oh, okay. Well, this is the interesting part. You're going to learn something that's going to help you today greatly and help you improve the care of your patient. Like if you think you know everything you need to know about pancreatitis, when you walk out today, you're like, that was something new that was helpful. So in this case, the blood pressure is low. He's not doing well, 100 over 60. The heart rate is high, it's 110. I have to share with you, this is a real family member of mine who was only 35 and passed away. It's heartbreaking. He had just married my niece. This is a real person that was dear to me. Anyway, his blood pressure was low, his heart rate was up. He was very sick. The emergency room gave him a liter bolus. He was so, when the vitals are like this, you know, it's severe acute pancreatitis, you go to the ICU, right? How can AI make this go from not surviving? He didn't survive, which is, it's really, and he was at the University of Chicago, which is fantastic, with the best physicians probably in the nation, and he still didn't survive, but AI could change that now. I'm going to show you how. In this study, which was published last month in Clinical Translational Gastroenterology, this was a study of 1,083 patients at Los Angeles General Hospital. All of these 1,000 patients had acute pancreatitis. I'm sure you see that all the time. I do. I've had thousands of patients like this. But you could see the numbers at Los Angeles General. 700 were over-resuscitated. This is not unusual. This is the norm. They got too much fluid by the treating physician. We give too much fluid. They ended up in respiratory failure in the ICU. So how can AI make this not happen? They developed an AI tool, which was a mathematical algorithm to predict the severity and manage the fluid resuscitation. So machine learning basically calculated how much fluid. It ended up being less than you would have given, and the patient did better because you gave them too much. You're like, no, I didn't. It happened in 700 of the 1,000 patients. Yes, we do. And AI can help, and it did help. And so just consider that as a future plan when you're taking care of someone with severe acute pancreatitis. Instead of just blowing the fluids in as fast as you can, have AI calculate the perfect amount for that individual. That's truly precision medicine. This amount for this patient, instead of just, okay, let's run it at 200 an hour, you know, for everybody. Pivoting back to cancer, we're on pancreas, obviously. Deep learning using convolutional neural networks can predict if a pancreatic lesion is benign or malignant. I'm sure you're aware that many high-profile people in the last few years have been diagnosed late with pancreatic cancer. AI can help detected earlier. Again, just like with the esophagus and the stomach, gastrointestinal cancers are always found late. And when they're found, usually their outcome, their mortality is high. So AI has the potential to do early detection where we can then take it out before it's too late. This was a systematic review in November of last year using deep learning, convolutional neural networks to predict if a pancreatic lesion, because you just see a lesion on imaging, how do you know if it's going to be benign or malignant? So this was a systematic review. They found that AI can detect pancreatic cancer at an early stage on CT scan. Now, here's something really amazing. If AI was used to look at that CAT scan and see things that our eye can't see, the pancreatic cancer was identified 475 days sooner. That's more than a year. And that sooner is enough to go from surviving to not surviving. I know if it was me, I would want AI to help read my CAT scan. So this is the evidence. This is not my opinion. We're back to pancreatic cancer. So this is another interesting thing. If you have had someone recently with a pancreatic mass, and I suspect you probably did, we send them for endoscopic ultrasound. That's the standard of care. And they, through the ultrasound, they put a needle and they sample to see if it's cancerous or not. We can eliminate some of that because we can train an algorithm to know just from the image whether or not that's going to be a benign or malignant pathology without taking the pathology. So for cytology taking during endoscopic ultrasound, the algorithm was 100%. That sounds like a broken record. For distinguishing benign versus malignant lesions. So instead of poking them numerous times with the needle, you don't have to do that. You could just show the AI the image on the endoscopic ultrasound. So they found you didn't have to keep passing the needle. Can you imagine just jabbing the needle in you all these times? And then what if I told you if you use AI, you don't have to jab the needle in a million times? What, would you prefer that for yourself? I would think so, right? I don't know. All right, more about pancreatic cancer. The main challenge, according to the authors of this systematic review, is early detection and that we need large data sets. And I mentioned this last time, but I'll remind you, ground truth is like, what does the real pathology show? What's the true diagnosis that's proven by biopsy? This is something interesting. So currently today, as we sit here or stand here, there's over 1,000 FDA-approved AI algorithms you can use, but there are no head-to-head comparisons of which are best. So what you're going to see in the years ahead is academic centers are going to start doing head-to-head comparisons, you know. One, like you do one drug or another drug, which is better? Well, which AI algorithm is better for pancreatic cancer? Well, we don't know. There's not one, there's many. So that would be, you know, the direction that I would like to go in terms of doing evidence-based medicine research on GI. So what about bile duct tumors, cholangiocarcinomas? Before I started doing what I'm doing now with the American College of Artificial Intelligence and medicine, I was an assistant professor at the University of Illinois College of Medicine, and I did bedside teaching rounds with the medical students. That was my passion. And when we would do that, the floor we were on, it was called the Walter Payton Liver Center, the general medical floor. It was dedicated to Walter Payton. He was a Chicago Bears football player who died of cholangiocarcinoma. So similarly, this is one that's hard to detect early and intervene on. This convolutional neural network, they just gave it 156 endoscopic ultrasound images of patients with biopsy-proven cholangiocarcinoma. That's the training. And they were able then to have the algorithm have a sensitivity of 94% and a specificity of 100% just by looking at the image. So we covered the esophagus, stomach, pancreas. You're like, what about the liver? The hepatologists are going to be mad at me, right? So studies have shown that AI is useful for diagnosing NAFLD, determining how severe liver fibrosis is, for predicting the response to treatment and recurrence of hepatocellular carcinoma, for helping with predicting outcomes after a liver transplant, for predicting the risk of drug-induced liver injury. So these are some of the things I'm going to talk about now and show you some of these evidence-based studies. But I think it's really good to learn from real cases. So here's a real case. A 55-year-old woman has diabetes and hypertension. Now, as a side note, this was someone that we had worked with for many years. She was first the secretary in our clinic. So when you would walk in, if a patient walked in, she would register you for your visit, and then the nurse would bring them to see me, right? Then she became like the person in charge of admitting for the entire hospital. Well, at one point, she had this problem. She went to see her primary doctor. They did blood work. They found her AST was 72 and her ALT was 64. And her BMI was 38. I mean, she was quite obese. And her blood pressure was high during that visit, 158 over 90. And she was a dear friend of mine because I had worked directly with her in the resident clinic for a long time, for decades. And now she was like very high in leadership in the hospital. And I said, well, what's the matter? She said, well, saw my primary care doctor. He did blood work and my liver functions are elevated. So I sent her to, we were fortunate, we had someone on staff that was previously the fellowship director for the hepatology program at Northwestern University. Really a superstar. So she saw him. What do you guys think the diagnosis was when he was done with the visit? Well, you're right. NAFLD, and there's other names for that now, as you know. But non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, or whatever you want to call it. The liver has fat because they're obese. The patients are obese and diabetic, and so the liver, her liver was just big and fatty. Now I want to tell you good news. Don't worry. She actually underwent obesity surgery, became thin, and her NAFLD is gone. And she's no longer diabetic, and she's no longer hypertensive. Isn't that amazing? I think it's a happy ending, right? Well, there's 64 published AI models specifically to detect NAFLD on an ultrasound. So this was published a year ago, February 2024. Artificial Intelligence for Non-Alcoholic Fatty Liver Disease, a Systematic Review. All right, how about another story case example. A 38-year-old woman was hospitalized for jaundice, and she had recently been treated for seizures with valproic acid. So that's, as you might imagine, a drug-induced liver problem. We call drug-induced liver injury. So someone, a hepatologist, in February of February. And this, I'm telling you something that was published this month. We're only 4 days into the month. You're like, how is that possible? I just did all this work for you guys. Isn't that amazing? Well, anyway, using a gradient boost algorithm, using AST, globulin, crank in the AST number, the globulin number, the prealbumin number, the creatinine number, the platelet count number, into a machine learning model. And what we had talked about in the previous sessions on cardiology and pulmonary is that gradient boosting is a really good way to do that. It was able to distinguish between the drug-induced liver injury versus someone that might have, say, autoimmune hepatitis. So how about a case of gallstones? I think more than any gastrointestinal disease, the one that I have seen the most is gallstones. These patients come to the emergency room, they have belly pain, they are severely symptomatic, they get admitted to the hospital, we order the ultrasound, we find the gallstone. I'm sure you've had hundreds of patients. This is something that we are experts at. We do it all the time. Well, sometimes when we do the workup, the lipase is high. That's a bad sign. That means the stone moved into the common duct and into the pancreas. We call that gallstone pancreatitis. Well, what does that have to do with AI? Well, a convolutional neural network can be trained to identify common duct stones with a sensitivity of 95.5% and a specificity of 92% and is comparable to a radiologist. I don't know about you, but I've had quite a few people where we had to have them swallow the capsule with the camera in it, right? Capsule endoscopy. And then once they're done with the test, you have to wait a long time for someone to read that, because this is hours and hours of pictures that the gastroenterologist has to interrogate. I just, as a side note, when I did my certification on artificial intelligence from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, one of our projects was that the next phase of this is not just swallowing the capsule with the camera, but actually that there's going to be tools inside the capsule where we can actually do microsurgeries and things like that. So one of the things that came out of that is this is a side note, if it's very common that children swallow these little batteries that look like a dime, and you may not know this, but hundreds of children are brought to the hospitals every year because they swallow these batteries that we use for various things. How they get them and swallow them, I don't know, but they do. And so at MIT, they were able to develop a technology inside of the capsule so we can have the child swallow the capsule, and then we could actually not only see the capsule with the camera, but remove it. And that's the important thing, because it embeds into the tissue permanently and causes medical problems. So anyway, that was a side note. So back to this capsule. A convolutional neural network, it's supposed to be CNN, algorithm can rapidly and accurately identify 12 different small bowel lesions. They trained it on 34,000 images of capsule endoscopy. The other thing that's good about using AI for capsule endoscopy is the time could be very short. In other words, the AI could just read the whole thing very quickly and tell you if there's you'll get the result like right away, and not instead of having to wait days for a specialist to look through all the images. So it really shortens the time to get your answer. Another case, a 30-year-old man, this is actually a friend of mine, has loose bloody stools for three times per day. I'm not kidding. This is really one of my dear friends. He told me about this a few weeks ago. So what did we find when he had a workup done? You guys are right. He had he's newly diagnosed inflammatory bowel disease. One of my dearest friends, he's only 30, in this newly diagnosed inflammatory bowel disease. So I was able to connect him with one of the best people on the planet, who's down at Northwestern. And he's getting TNF type therapy, anti-TNF therapy. So how does this fit into AI? Well, there's been a lot of different ways that AI has been used in the last year. But this is from January of 2025. Now, you may recall when I gave the cardiology talk, we can use the smartwatch for detecting atrial fibrillation. And you may recall when I gave you the pulmonary talk, we can use the smartwatch for detecting sleep apnea. That was the new release of the smartwatch that Apple company, the day they released it, said, hey, you can use this for sleep apnea screening. So we could screen for AFib, we could screen for sleep apnea. What about in GI? Well, this was so cool. When I told my friend about this, he's like, he sent me one of those emojis where it shows your mind is blown. You know, I had never gotten an emoji like that before. I didn't even know it existed. Anyway, so in this study, 309 patients, data was collected and submitted from not just Apple Watch. We were very fair. We gave all comers a chance. So you could have a Fitbit. Like when the Fitbit came out, we had them. Everyone had one. We wore them for a while, and then everybody stopped wearing. And then there's, besides the Fitbit and the Apple Watch, you know, people have the rings right now. There's rings that can gather health information data. So anyway, if we look at heart rate, the number of steps taken, and the oxygen saturation, this is so amazing. 7 weeks prior to someone flaring with inflammatory bowel disease, you could detect it using AI. So can you imagine if you could detect it 7 weeks early and do something, then they won't end up in the hospital with a flare. How cool is that? So this was published in the journal Gastroenterology, which is the main GI journal, in January, and it's called Physiological Data from a Wearable Device to Identify and Predict Inflammatory Bowel Disease Flares. This blows my mind. I hope it's blowing your mind. But what else for inflammatory bowel disease? Well, obviously we can have it if it's in the colonoscope for colon polyps, it could be in there for looking at ulcerative colitis activity. So there's been 25 studies so far looking at using it to quantify how active is the ulcerative colitis during the time of the scope. Also, there's 12 studies on using it for the capsule endoscopy for patients with inflammatory bowel disease. And for the colonoscope, it can distinguish whether there's ulcerative colitis or not, Crohn's or not, and whether it's ulcerative colitis or Crohn's. So the scope itself, without biopsying, can tell whether it's ulcerative colitis or Crohn's just from the images. So this was a systematic review on AI and endoscopy and inflammatory bowel disease. Well, we're almost getting towards the end of the gastrointestinal tract, right? Get it? We're on the last part. Colon. So I'll share with you that my father passed away of colon cancer. So I get my colonoscopy screening, and I started 10 years earlier than I would otherwise have done, because I don't want to get colon cancer. So like, I'm on it. I've gotten my screenings done and I'm on it. But it's the second most common cause of cancer death worldwide. Now, you might find this hard to believe, but there's a significant adenoma miss rate. If I were to have my colonoscopy done right now, I don't need it yet. My birthday is this month, February 27th, so I won't need another one. I'll just tell you, I'm turning 58 in a few weeks, the next one's in 2 years. So I had one at 40, which is 10 years beforehand, and then 50, and then now 60, although they do have, some of the guidelines want you to start at 45 instead of 50. So, but at any rate, let's say I had it today. Let's say I'm like, well, let me get it early, right? And I had it done today. The chance of missing an adenoma on me is substantial. It's high. It's like 30%. And if that gastroenterologist misses it and it turns into cancer, then how am I going to come here and do this talk with you guys, right? So anyway, if we add AI into the colonoscopy, we'll reduce the miss rate. Now, this paper was published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, which is the journal that is for the American College of Physicians. I've been a member of the American College of Physicians since I was a resident, so now 30 years membership. And 10 years after becoming a member, I became a fellow, or FACP. I would encourage all of you to apply at some point in the future to become a fellow of ACP. But I tell you that because as a member and a fellow, I, for 30 years in a row, I get the Annals of Internal Medicine, and I read it. And this paper was so good that I actually have given it to everyone in my lab group. I have over 20 lab groups of medical students and residents and faculty that are working with me on publishing on AI. You're welcome to be in one of the lab groups. Some of you guys are already part of that. But I gave everyone this article because it's so well done. This was published by a combination of a physician, Dr. Solomon Jahai, who's at one of the Harvard hospitals, and Yale GI group. But it is such a perfectly done review article that everyone that's working with me on review articles, I said, here's an example. Make your review article look like this because it's so perfectly done. I'm sure you have this because you probably get the annals if you're an attending or a resident or in internal medicine. If you don't get this or don't have access, email me. I'll show you my email. I'll send it to you. I send it out to everyone that works with me. So this just came out in December. Now, what does it show? It shows that without AI, the adenoma miss rate for any gastroenterologist is 35%. So that means a third of the time they're going to miss the adenoma. Whereas if you add AI, it doesn't go to zero, but it goes from 35% to 16%. So I don't know about you, but the next time I go for my colonoscopy, which is in 2 years, I'm going to make sure that whoever is doing that scope on me, I'm going to ask them before they put me to sleep, is AI in that scope? Because if it's not, I'm not signing that consent form. No way. The good news is that almost everyone doing colonoscopy these days in America has AI in their scope. All right, well, we worked our way from mouth to anus, right? That doesn't sound good. Now it's time for questions. Anyone want to fire a question? It doesn't have to be about today's talk. It could be about anything AI, but if you want to make it related to the GI part, that would be good.
How common is that all these AI programs are implemented, like in either like aspects of medicine, in terms like of like worldwide or even in the US? Like how common, like you said, every colonoscopy, there's or every scope now, they have AI implemented program, and the same for the ultrasound and all these things.
Okay, so the chief, it's Ola, correct? Ola is the chief resident here, and she asked a brilliant question, and she's planning a career in oncology, and I hope she recognized that almost the entire talk was actually about oncology, but of the gastrointestinal tract. And she asked a brilliant question, which is, why is there this delay in implementation? And that is key. So I have to share with you that first of all, the GI world has been really good. During COVID times, these randomized trials were being done. How they got them in during the COVID time, I'll never know. But a lot of the work that I showed you, the original, it was done, some of it was done at Rush here. There was really good work, say, from 2000 till now, where they did all these randomized trials. They were being done by the colonoscopes that had AI embedded in an evidence-based way to test them, prove them, get the data. So we're now at a point where the data is there. I showed it to you. Most GI departments have bought the AI embedded scopes. So I'm not too worried that if I go for my colonoscope, I'm pretty confident that it'll be there. I'll be checking because not every hospital in America has had a chance to buy the technology yet. But of all areas in medicine, GI is way ahead of the game. But in terms of the 1,000 plus algorithms, 75% are in radiology. And I was at the radiology meeting here in Chicago, RSNA, in December. All the radiologists from the academic centers were there trying to decide, of these 1,000 choices which haven't been tested against each other, which ones do we use? And so I hope you see there's a, you wouldn't give a drug unless it was tested in a randomized trial. We're evidence-based physicians, right? We want to see the data before we do it, right? Well, I showed you the data, so now we gotta do it. And actually, that's what's happening. So most hospitals now are creating a position called Chief AI Officer, or CAIO. And it's that person's job to decide if there's 1,000 choices, and many of them do the same thing, we have to pick one. And then the hospital has to purchase access to that. It's usually a subscription to that algorithm. And then we have to put it into the radiology department. And so this is what's going to be happening this year everywhere. And so you guys are seeing it as it's about to happen. So if I stand here in front of you a year from now, hopefully all of this will have happened. But I can't ask you a year from now, because if I want to do that, I have to fly to California, go to Stanford, and find you and say, wow. So I have to say, I don't know if she's going to be mad for telling you guys this, but Ola will be faculty at Stanford next year. And I almost want to cry. So anyway, other questions? All right. Well, thank you guys for coming. And if you want to be part of what we're doing with the research at American College of Artificial Intelligence and Medicine, come up to me. I'll give you one of my cards. You can email me, or you can go to our website and sign up for one of our lab groups. But it's been a pleasure seeing you guys again, and have a great rest of your day.
If you enjoyed what you heard here today, consider becoming a member of our professional society by going to www.americancollegeaim.org and click join. Also, don't forget to save the dates. September 19th and 20th, 2025, we'll be having our first ever scientific session at McCormick Place right here in Chicago. Go to our website to register to attend the conference. We hope to see you all live in Chicago, and we look forward to having you tune in to our next podcast on Melvin Monday here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube.